Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Division 6 of the Colorado Court of Appeals. We have two cases set for oral argument this morning, People versus Garcia and Warnke, I hope I pronounced that correct, versus Washburn. I assume counsel for both parties are here and checked in. You each should have gotten a sheet kind of detailing what our procedures are for oral argument. Does anybody have any questions about those? Great. Okay. What we'll do is we will hear the Garcia case first and then the Warnke case second. Let me ask if anybody in the audience has a cell phone or a pager or anything like that. Please turn it off now so as not to interrupt counsel or the court during oral argument. When counsel come to the podium, we'd appreciate if you identify yourself both by name and attorney registration number. And unless there are any questions, we'll proceed with argument in People versus Garcia.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Robert Borquez, registration number 19577, representing the defendant appellant Ruben Joseph Garcia. Your Honors, this appeal presents one issue, and that's whether the trial court should have granted the defendant's motion to enforce a plea agreement. And under the circumstances in this case, the defendant submits that the people's deadline for acceptance of the proposed plea agreement was both arbitrary and unreasonable. The trial court should have granted the motion for enforcement of the agreement. And the sequence of events leading up to the disposition that never was is critical in this case, and I'm not sure I made it that clear in my opening brief. But what happened was Mr. Garcia's case was set for an arraignment on Friday, February 29th of 2008. And at that time, a plea offer was communicated by the people, by the deputy district attorney, to Mr. Garcia's trial counsel. The arraignment was continued until the following Monday, which would have been March 3rd. And that was to permit defense counsel some time to discuss the offer with Mr. Garcia. However, for a couple of reasons, counsel was unable to do that. First of all, the sheriffs did not transport Mr. Garcia to the Pueblo District Court on Monday the 3rd, so he was unable to confer with him prior to the arraignment at that time. Also, trial counsel had tried to contact Mr. Garcia by telephone to discuss the offer, and I believe that's in the record. It's in the transcript of August 22nd, 2008. It's on pages 3 and 4. And counsel was unable to confer with Mr. Garcia by phone because the defendant was in segregation and his case manager either was unable or unwilling to get him to the telephone. So there was no discussion of the proposed plea offer between when it was made on the 29th and when the defendant eventually was brought to court, which was on Wednesday, the 5th of March. Trial counsel tried.
Mr. Borquez, was this information presented to the trial court at the time?
I believe so. It's in the transcript for August 22nd, and it's on pages 3 and 4. So I think it was presented at the time the trial court judge heard the motion to enforce the plea agreement. It may not have been brought up on March 5th. It's unclear. But I think it was at least brought up then. At any rate, he did not have a chance to confer with the defendant. He was going to try to confer with the defendant on the 5th of March, but there was an incident that took place, a verbal exchange between one of the victims and the defendant. And to use the trial judge's own words, emotions were running high that day. And as a result, the defendant was not in any position to clearly consider the offer and requested the 1 week extension of the offer and continuance of the arraignment. The deputy district attorney said that while he would be prepared to continue discussions, the offer expired that day. So effectively, the defendant was being told on the 5th that this is the deadline. At any rate,
why is that not appropriate for the prosecution to withdraw an offer
It's not appropriate in this case, Your Honor, because given the fact that there was this incident that had taken place, the defendant was not going to be able to consider the offer clearly. And it raises questions, we contend, under Rule 11. In order for a plea to be validly accepted, it's got to be voluntary, and it's got to be free of undue influence. And it's our position that if the defendant was not thinking clearly, there's a Rule 11 problem that's presented.
It's my recollection that the defendant requested the continuance so that he could discuss the matter with his family.
I think that was a factor too, Your Honor. That is a factor. And I think before somebody signs away the next 20 years of his life, it's not unreasonable to request time to discuss a proposal like this with one's family. But I think there was more than one factor at play here.
How would there be a Rule 11 problem unless there was a Rule 11 proceeding?
Okay.
I suppose we could only evaluate that once the proceeding took place.
Correct, and I think that's something of a catch-22 situation, Your Honor. I think that the fact that the trial judge observed that emotions were running high at least sends up a red flag that there might be a Rule 11 problem trying to take a plea under these circumstances.
Can we say anything more than at best there might be a problem? I mean, wouldn't there have to be an actual problem demonstrated?
I think that the fact that there was the altercation, the verbal altercation that took place, coupled with the fact that even the trial judge made the observation and trial counsel contended in the motion, albeit the motion was filed after March 5th, the motion to enforce the plea agreement, he raises this he mentions it in the motion.
But all of those kind of problems could have been corrected or at least minimized by the trial judge if they went to a Rule 11 proceeding.
I think, Your Honor, had they gone to the Rule 11 proceeding, a couple of things could have happened. If he were asked, and again, this is getting hypothetical here, if the question were put to my client in the Rule 11 proceeding, are you doing this voluntarily? Are you doing this of your own free will? Are you under the influence? Are you under any undue influence in making this decision? It's quite possible he would have said, yes, I'm quite upset about what just happened, but I'm going to take the offer anyway. I don't know where that would have left us. The other possibility is he would have said, I'm fine making this decision. I know what I'm doing, and I'm comfortable doing it, and I'm thinking clearly. I think, your point is well taken, Your Honor, that had we gone to the Rule 11 proceeding, these questions might have been answered better, but we didn't, and this is what we're working with.
So,
at any rate, Your Honors, it's our position that we dispute the people's contention that the defendant had ample time to consider this offer. He didn't really have ample time to discuss the offer with his attorney and or with his family. He essentially made the request for some additional time on the 5th, and it was rejected. There's no real Colorado authority on this issue. The closest we have is People versus Jasper, and of course, that has to do with judicially imposed deadlines on plea negotiations and requires that a trial court give reasonable notice as to when a cutoff date is going to be. And what we're essentially doing is asking this court to apply a similar rule to prosecution deadlines on plea agreements and require that the people give some kind of reasonable deadlines or cutoff dates.
Do you know of any authority that would permit the court to direct a prosecutor to keep a deadline open?
I think it's a question of fundamental fairness, Your Honor, as far as the people have an obligation. They are under no obligation to enter any kind of plea negotiations with a defendant. But it's our position that once they do initiate plea negotiations, they have a burden to do so and act in a reasonable and non-arbitrary manner.
And how do you draw the line?
What
if the offer had originally been made and said, yeah, you got 24 hours? I mean, how do you draw the line between that and what we're talking, the facts that we're talking about here?
24 hours is a lot more reasonable than make a decision now. That's our position. 24 hours allows, it may be a compressed timeline, but it would have allowed counsel for Mr. Garcia time to go out and meet with him. In the transcript, he indicated he didn't have time right then to meet with him, but defense attorneys often will go out and meet with an incarcerated defendant, even in the evenings. And this could have been a situation where that's something that could have been done. So even 24 hours wouldn't be an unreasonable deadline to give.
What about 12 hours? I mean, I'm struggling.
And I appreciate that.
We're supposed to adopt some kind of legal principle. What's the rationale for where we put that line?
I think, Your Honor, where the line should be drawn is where the people, one consideration is where the people are going to be prejudiced. And let me give you an extreme example. Many times a plea offer will be made to a defendant and it will remain open until a motions hearing, or even until a preliminary hearing, or until trial. But there's a rational reason for that, because it's at that point that the people have to start expending time and money preparing a case for trial or a motions hearing. And it's not uncommon for prosecutors to put offers on the table and say, the offer is revoked at this point in time when we go to a motions hearing, or the week before trial, or I think it was in the Mershon case, it was a month before trial. There's a good reason for that. In this case, there was no, the people identified no reason why they were going to be prejudiced by the 1 week of additional time.
Does that prejudice rationale that you just articulated, does that exist in any case law?
Not that I'm familiar with, Your Honor. The people have taken the position in their brief that Colorado case law holds prosecution may establish reasonable, or may establish deadlines for accepting proposed plea agreements. Our position is simply that the prosecution should be required to establish reasonable deadlines for acceptance of proposed plea agreements. That's basically what the case boils down to.
And my understanding is this, the stem of what you're arguing is from the due process clause.
Yes. Unless there are any other questions, I'll yield the podium to counsel for the people.
Thank you. You've got a little over 3 minutes for any rebuttal. Thanks. You might like.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Catherine Hansen. Registration number 25464, appearing on behalf of the people in this matter. We do have record support for on February 29th of 2008, the parties indicated they had a tentative plea offer. The courts made it very clear, we're gonna set this over for March 5th, which was the next Wednesday, for either arraignment or plea and sentencing. That provided the defendant ample opportunity to consider a plea offer that he had already apparently considered, because they indicated there was a tentative plea agreement. On March 5th, the only thing he asked for was additional time to discuss this with his family. The prosecution indicated that it wasn't willing to do that, had every right to do that. The defendant was made on, it was made very clear that if he didn't accept the plea that day, which apparently even that day, defense counsel had indicated that they had talked at the jail, they were ready to go, that he was going to take the plea agreement. The prosecution made it very clear that if he didn't accept it that day, it was going to be withdrawn. And the defendant said, that's fine. I don't think we have any concerns about notice here. We don't have any concerns about unfair amount of time to consider an offer. The defendant didn't even raise this commotion issue until 3 months later in his motion to enforce the plea agreement. And basically, we don't have a plea agreement, so we have nothing to enforce. The prosecution had every right to withdraw that plea if it wasn't accepted on that day, that plea offer. Basically, I think the record amply supports the trial court's denial of the motion to enforce the plea agreement. Unless this court has any further questions, we would just ask that this court affirm.
Let me ask you this. Mr. Borges was just stating that under due process, there needs to be fairness and the prosecutor's actions should not be arbitrary. or unreasonable. And so what would be your response to that? Can a prosecutor act in any way in withdrawing a deadline, and would that be fair, or is there any circumstance it would not be fair?
Well, I think the only circumstances in which the defendant has a due process claim is if he detrimentally relied on the plea offer. So we have no case law that says that the prosecution has any sort of duty to act in any particular manner when making offers, setting deadlines. The only thing that the case law requires is that if the defendant detrimentally relies on an offer, then he's entitled to a specific performance of that plea offer.
So maybe I've watched too many Law and Order episodes, but what if the prosecutor sits down and meets with the defendant and his lawyer and says, here's the offer. You can take it in the next 5 minutes or it's withdrawn. Is there any due process concern with that?
No. No, I don't believe so.
And no case law, as far as you know that would say so?
No case law. Like I said, the only case law that deals with the defendant being entitled to force a plea bargain is when he has detrimentally relied on it. The prosecution has no obligation. I suppose you could have a prosecutorial misconduct, bad faith type of kind of generic claim if there was something really, really egregious about it, suggests conditioning it upon something highly inappropriate or something like that. But I mean, again, I have no case law indicating that would be the case. That would be the only thing I could think of that would give rise to any sort of a claim, absent the defendant's detrimental reliance on any sort of offer.
Let me ask you this about the Jasper case, because my understanding of Jasper was there was no indication of detrimental reliance, but it did place limits on a court imposing a deadline for notice and making sure that the deadline would not be arbitrary. So would that have any applicability here?
No, because Jasper, Jasper not only deals with a trial court's authority to accept or reject a plea bargain and the parameters of that authority, but the Supreme Court made it very clear that the authority and the rights and what they were looking at were the court rules, statutes, and Rule 11, which imposed an obligation upon the court to give the plea agreement independent judgment and exercise its discretion. So the court has this affirmative duty to exercise independent judgment and discretion. And so the court then said, with that background in mind, there has to be some limits, though, because there was no outline of what does constitute independent judgment or just exercising its discretion. So the court basically said, okay, the court needs to do this, but it can't do so. There has to be some limitation, some indication that it has, in fact, exercised its independent judgment. And the only two requirements that they placed on the trial court is that if it's going to deny a plea agreement based solely on the failure to meet a deadline, there has to be notice of the deadline, and the defendant has to have the opportunity to assert good cause for why they didn't establish that. A note in Jasper, the notice requirement was met, and they noted that the argument about lack of notice was waived because no one claimed they had no notice. Here, there's no argument up until appeal that he possibly didn't have notice that March 5th was going to be the cutoff date, and I would argue that the record amply shows that he knew that that was the cutoff date. But they also said it's not on the trial court to ask the parties for good cause. It's the party's obligation to establish good cause. So there is a statutory rule-based framework for the trial court exercising its discretion in rejecting a plea agreement. None of that applies to the prosecution. The prosecution has the right to make an offer, has the right to withdraw an offer. If the defendant has detrimentally relied on the offer, then that provides some limits as to whether the prosecution can withdraw the offer or not comply with its part of the bargain. But other than that, there's no rule-based statutory requirement of discretion, anything like that. And so it's highly distinguishable from Jasper. Any more questions? Okay, we would ask that this court affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Mr. Borges, you've got 3 minutes and 22 seconds for any rebuttal you'd like to make.
I I would just rely upon my opening argument, and unless the court has any questions in light of Ms. Hansen's argument. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel for your very helpful arguments. The matter will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. Counsel for the Garcia case are excused. And if counsel for the Warnke case want to set up a counsel table, as soon as you're ready, we'll proceed to hear argument in that case.